As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Join me today, it's my good friend Nate Tyson. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm ready for this kind of section of the year. This is like a weird, it's still busy, but it's not busy kind of part of the offseason, you know, because it's leading up to the draft and you got pro days and it's kind of free agency or initial wave came off. So it always just feels like peaks and valleys.
This week always, to me, signals the transition into draft time. The second week of free agency is when the eye of Sauron, as my time and focus, finally shifts to draft coverage. And this show is indicative of that. Just a heads up, I mentioned this on the show we did with Diana that came out on Monday. Moving forward from now through the draft, our schedule on the Athletic Football Show is going to be Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. The Tuesday shows, which we are kicking off today, are going to be a mock draft of sorts. So when I say that, let's roll out what we mean here. We're going to go in reverse order. We're going to go from 32 to 1 in chunks, and we're going to talk about the mock draft scenarios at each one of these picks. What are these team needs? What players might be available? We're going to throw out a couple names, but we're not going to land on anything definitive because you can't do a mock draft in reverse because that's not how it works. So this is more an exercise of pairing potential fits with these teams, where the holes are. It's really just a good way to talk about the prospects and the roster construction of pretty much every single team in the NFL. So that is what we're going to do every Tuesday for the next 6 weeks. Yeah, exactly.
Memento order for the mock drafts. Memento mock drafts. That's how we're doing it.
We're celebrating Christopher Nolan now. It's, you know, that's kind of how the last couple weeks have gone. There's some career achievement awards being handed out in a way, and we're going to do the exact same thing with an homage here on the Athletic Football Show and how we're structuring
this. One of these selections will be Sammy Jenkins. That's what we're going to go with. It is kind of Christopher Nolan month. It's good. I didn't want to bring this up, but we did kind of do like a pretty hot take Q&A mailbag question one time, and ever since then Christopher Nolan's been on a tear. So I think you fired him up a little bit. You kind of said he was a little, you were kind of lukewarm on him, was like one of your takes, I believe.
This is my stance on Christopher Nolan. His intellectual reach had far exceeded his grasp, but when it came to storytelling and screenwriting over the last 10 to 15 years, when he's telling me straightforward, yeah,
well, you mean Tenet?
Not even just Tenet.
You just mean Tenet. Yeah.
I think that if you look at, I don't need the timelines in Dunkirk. That's totally unnecessary to me. So him telling, I mean, I understand that Oppenheimer had flashbacks, but it's a biopic. It's a biopic that has flashbacks. That's fine. As a straightforward storyteller and filmmaker, I think that he's wonderful. So if he wants to make historical fiction or historical nonfiction movies for the rest of his career, just go back and tell stories that have happened and tell them in some sort of linear fashion, I'm completely fine with that.
Just give him a new character, like new interesting historical figure. And just go, all right, one per decade. All right, who we got next?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Wouldn't you watch that? I would watch every single one of those.
Well, absolutely, I would watch that. Let's go, all right, Teddy Roosevelt. Let's just throw one out there. And just say, you know, just one per little chunk of history. We'll just go through that lens. I like that.
And I'm actually considering Batman one of those historical figures that he told those stories with. So
I like that. That's good. I was going to say, he hit up Tesla and the Prestige. So we got Tesla in there. So we're good. We love those scenes.
Yeah, Tesla famously created a cloning machine. That was one of the things that Nikola Tesla did very well.
Yes. All right. Yeah, cloned hats.
That's so as our homage here to Christopher Nolan, we are going to go backwards. We are going to go 32-1 in how we're presenting this. But we're going to try to talk about pretty much every single team here over the next 5 weeks as we attack this in chunks. So let's start with the defending Super Bowl champions and the team that is picking 32nd overall, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs. So I want to begin each one of these by laying out some needs that we feel like these teams still have. Part of the downside of doing this exercise in March is that some of this could potentially be filled. We still have second, third wave of free agency, so obviously keep that in mind as we discuss where the holes on these rosters are. But as you're looking at the Chiefs right now on March 18th, as we're digging into this, what do you think the biggest remaining holes in the Chiefs roster still are?
It's even with the Hollywood Brown signing, it still feels like receiver. I have to get it out of the way. Otherwise, I think any Chiefs fan listening to this would go, like, why aren't you talking about wide receiver? But I think wide receiver and offensive line. I think offensive tackle in particular is what would line up to what their needs are and what they can kind of where they're at on timelines with some of their players, and also where this draft is, where what kind of players that they can find at those spots. So to me, that's what stands out at first because of just what they've done on defense the last few years. So defense, yeah, you want to continue to add pieces, especially up front. But I think right now where this draft is, what they need as in particular, it's more, some of those offensive pieces, which I think kind of lines up with what we saw at the end of last season.
Let's talk about receiver, because I assume a lot of people are going to look at the Hollywood Brown signing and just see that as a check box for the Chiefs. When you're looking at what Hollywood Brown is as a player and how he could be deployed in this offense, what type of receiver need and what type of receiver role do you still think they need to drop in here potentially in the first round?
Outside zone beater. That's what I think. Whether you want to say it's an X or a Z, I think Rashee Rice is more of a Z. So I guess it would be more of an X. It'd be someone really to take over for Kelce down the road. You can't go one-to-one with him, but really just that kind of feed and the man beater, the zone beater, the true guy that can line up outside, isolated. To me, that's what they need. And remember, Veach has kind of doubled down on when they've had a team need. The offensive line one is the one we've talked about a bunch. Hey, the end of Super Bowl against the Bucs, boom, they kind of fell apart because of the offensive line. So what did they do? Signed Tooney, drafted Creed Humphrey, drafted Trey Smith. Okay, boom, all right, now we got the offensive line. Then the defense kind of fell apart. Okay, we weren't tackling against the Bengals at the end of the season. So, okay, we signed Justin Reed, and we get just a whole bunch of DB and all the draft picks and all those guys. So Hollywood Brown is the one little sprinkling of the receiver position. I could see them doubling down and drafting, especially with the guys that are right here, because there's a couple X types.
Even with Hollywood Brown coming in, this team was an 11 personnel on 62% of its snaps last year. And even if you consider him a one-for-one replacement for MVS, which he isn't really, but even if we want to concede that, Justin Watson still played 540 snaps for this team last year. There is still a potential need for another outside receiver. So I think that's absolutely worth mentioning, even in a post-Hollywood Brown world. Left tackle to me still feels like the biggest glaring need, even when you consider receiver. Wanya Morris is on the roster. He was a third round pick last year. He started 4 games last season. Unless you want to slot him into that role from day one, Donovan Smith hit free agency. So I'm not sure how comfortable you'd be trotting Morris out there in week one. I assume they're not. But there are a bunch of options potentially in this second, third wave of free agency if they want to hit it that way. Donovan Smith could come back on a cheap deal. Trent Brown is still out there. A guy like David Bakhtiari. That's how they've approached this position over the last couple of years. It's just been the annual veteran left tackle that seems to come through town. So there's a chance that they fill that with a player of that archetype before we even get to the draft. But as it currently stands, I think left tackle is still a pretty big need. Those two, tackle and receiver, I would say, are at the top of the list. But there's probably a couple more we could hit.
Yeah, well, and always remember is Andy Reid, his original background's offensive line. He doesn't go into season until he has the offensive line solved, kind of figured out. The Bucs season or the loss to the Bucs was injuries and everything stacking up. But he's not going to go in without it solved or some means to an answer to solving it. And that's why especially when there's guys right here, there's guys like Kingsley Suamata, who's from BYU. Big time pedigree, but can maybe play both sides, but really just former 5-star recruit from Oregon, transfers to BYU, has a lot of tools, but just doesn't have a lot of playing time. There's a few of these types of guys in this draft, but for a team like the Chiefs, it's like, holy crap, we can get this guy that has upside at pick 32 or around that range and get a guy that could be a potential left tackle or right tackle down the road, that some guy that we wouldn't usually get because this draft at tackle is so deep. So I think they're like lined up pretty well.
It's an interesting thing to bring up because I wonder if would they want to draft another guy that you think needs a little bit of work, or do they feel like they already have that developmental prospect and what they really need is just to sign a stopgap guy to get them through the season while they continue to develop Morris. I wonder how they view both the short and long-term resources at the position.
Yeah, I mean, because at receiver, they've drafted projects, but it's just like how they view a line. Are they comfortable going with that? I know last year they were very interested in Anton Harrison, the guy that went to the Jaguars, who I thought needed some time. So so there is some kind of like acceptance of a guy that needs a little like seasoning. Tackle is just so hard to find a guy with actual pedigree, an actual guy that can turn into a true, you know, even just good starter, a Decker level starter. But I think that just that is why this just aligns kind of nicely for them, because it's just different types of guys that will be available for them, I think, of just how this draft will fall out.
If you look at the timeline last year, they signed Donovan Smith on May 4th. Or May 3rd, right, whatever it was, early May. So it was post-draft. So there's a chance that we see them on the exact same timeline if they don't want to draft a tackle at the back half of the first round, or they find one guy that they think could start immediately. The other two positions I would throw out, just as kind of a little bit further down the line needs, corner. If they end up trading Legarius Sneed, it's really just Josh Williams behind him and Trent McDuffie right now. So do they feel like they need another corner somewhere along the way here? And then I throw interior defensive line on there as well, because they got a lot of guys on short-term cheap deals. They brought back Derek Nnadi on a short-term cheap deal. Mike Pinnell, who had that wonderful Super Bowl, is back on a cheap one-year deal. So those two, even if they're not quite as glaring as left tackle and receiver are, those are the other two that I would throw out if we just wanted to kind of kick them all.
And again, corner, and you're going to hear me talk about these three positions really at this point in the draft: receiver, tackle, corner.
There's
interesting guys.
Every single team.
And the prospects that line up for them, it like matches perfectly. So it's actually kind of nice, but you're going to hear me repeating a lot of names and everything. But corner, there's going to be interesting guys. So I won't spoil it yet, but there are some interesting prospects in this kind of range.
So let's move on to some of the players who might be available in this range that align with some of those needs. And let's start with wide receiver. Which of these guys who might be around in this group do you think fits? I think you mocked Xavier Worthy from Texas there in your mock for Yahoo. I wonder if the Marquise Brown speed seasoning element of this might push you in a different direction. So after the moves they've made in free agency, where do you think, well, which receivers do you think align with what they still need?
I think that was a Charles McDonald special on the last one. We alternated picks. So, because I'm not as high on Xavier Worthy as other people are. We'll get to that when we talk more about receivers.
The undersized speed guy isn't your guy?
Undersized body catcher? Sub 180 is already tough enough for me. Sub 170 is even tougher. I don't care. 4.21, very fast. But this is, to me, if I'm looking at what I think they need, what that outside guy, there's Xavier Worthy's teammate, A.D. Mitchell from Texas, who is more of a traditional X, very rangy, another high pedigree guy. I really like him, I think he does have some inconsistencies at times, but he can move and jump and catch and the ball skills. He's a true red zone threat, which is what I think they need. And I think he'd pair nicely with what they have, but he might go a little higher than this, but that is the guy I have kind of, that would be a perfect fit for them. Keon Coleman from Florida State didn't test really well, but his GPS numbers, his movement numbers are a little better than that. He's kind of an eye of the beholder type because, doesn't create a lot of separation. Again, didn't test well. He's a big ball winner type. I struggle with him. I've kind of gone back and forth with him, but he's, again, a guy in this range.
If you've struggled with him, then that tells me a lot about where his potential downside is, because I'm still wading in with these guys. I just watched Keon Coleman for the first time this morning. And if you have issues with what he brings to the table, he is typically the sort of flavor that you love at this position.
I'm usually glass half full with these types of guys, and I've gone from half full, fully full, all the way empty. I cannot figure him out. I struggle with him and his teammate, Johnny Wilson.
So let's talk about this. Where do you feel like there are some of the inconsistencies or some of the downsides that are giving you pause with him?
His route running is still raw. You can see that he was a basketball player that's still learning football. I think that he does move better and does track the ball really well, and I didn't think his quarterback did a good job of like giving him a lot of chances. They have these two gigantic receivers, and I've never seen so many line drive throws. It's like, just give it arc, throw it up, give him rebounds, don't give him back shoulders. But I would watch with him is that the route running's still raw. There's still just inconsistencies in that way. I still think that just when he is at the catch point, like he'll slow down. Like he's not like a run through the catch kind of type of guy. So he's not comfortable playing receiver. And I don't mean that in like a totally bad way because his ball skills are outstanding, which is receiver as well. But I'd say the feel for position is still, he needs some room. And he's not an over, like I said, again, the testing numbers weren't great.
He ran a 4.61 at the combine.
Yes, thank you. It's that, that's kind of an alarm bell too, because that shows up. Again, the lack of separation when you don't test well, oh, that could be some alarm bells. And again, that's why I want to bring up the GPS numbers, because he always has high GPS numbers. So that's the Puka Nacua discussion. But Puka Nacua went in the fifth round.
Yeah, the fifth round's a little bit different than 32 overall.
Right. So Keon Coleman, late second. Oh, good. Borderline late first. Okay, then I'm getting a little dicey. But again, he's a guy I struggle with. But this is, again, that's the archetype I think this team needs. So it's like his fit's actually not bad, but I'd like him a little later.
Let's talk about some of the tackles who might be available here. The tackle class is obviously loaded. We've discussed this already. This will be a conversation that comes up a ton over the next month or so. Me, you, and Dane later this week are doing the Idiot's Guide to the Draft that we always kick off our draft coverage with. So we'll talk about some of the strengths and weaknesses Spoilers. Positionally. But always excited to do that show because at this stage, I am a draft moron. So I appreciate you guys educating me. But as I look at the tackle group, it seems like that second tier of guys, whether that's Ardarius Mims from Georgia, Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, it feels like they might be pushed up even further than this. So is there going to be maybe a second run on tackle somewhere in the teens or 20s that doesn't leave a lot of options for the Chiefs here? That's my main question as I look at early looks at the first round.
There's a lot of these, yeah, like you said, I have four guys as blue chippers, and I'm including Mims, but that's Fashanu from Penn State, Joel from Notre Dame, J.C. Latham from Alabama, and then Amarius Mims from Georgia. Mims is a lot of projection, but there's still good tape. He's played eight games. You're going to hear us talk a lot about him. He's one of the...
I'm very excited to dig into him.
He's one of the most unique prospects ever, and I mean that in a good way, but he's going to be a lot of fun to talk about as we dive into this. That's four guys that I consider valid, like, don't have to squint top 20 guys, top 15 guys. I'm like, yep, you don't. That's where I see those guys. Once you get past that, there's five guys, potentially six, that is either the beholder that are comfortable guys that can go between 20 and 40, graded that way. Sometimes in drafts, there's not a lot of lineman talent. These guys are the ones that get inflated into the top 20. So what I'm saying all this is there's depth along with these blue chip types of guys. And I'd even mention Troy Fontenot from Washington, who has legit five position upside. Graham Barton from Duke, who has he also has five position upside.
Good left tackle at Duke, projects inside in the NFL, is my understanding.
Love him. All these guys I consider way up there. Like I have my big board coming out tomorrow, or actually when you guys are going to listen to this on Yahoo. And I have all of those guys that I mentioned. So Fashanu, Alt, Latham, Mims, Fontenot, and Barton as legit blue chip, top 15, top 20 type prospects. That is six guys. And that is, so that's just, okay. And then we get to depth. And then there's Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon, who really fun barroom brawler type, good athlete, big body, really fun personality. Some guys have him way up there. I have him a little lower, but still, all these guys are really interesting. But so when we're at the Chiefs, a guy like I've mentioned before, but Kingsley Suamata from BYU, that's a guy I've seen inflated that gets drafted way higher. I've seen Tyler Smith go higher than him, and he had worse tape than Kingsley Suamata. This is a guy that I could see in this range. Dane just projected him to go 33 to the Ravens. I have him as an early 20s guy on my big board. I'm pretty high on him. But that's the range. That's the type of guy that I would usually see inflated that they could actually get in this range. And he has legit left tackle upside, which is I think is a great fit. Another guy is Jordan Morgan from Arizona. Another guy that's been kind of going in this range. He's more of a guard tackle swing type. People can't really figure out. I can't figure out what his best spot is. I would still give him a shot at right tackle. He plays left tackle right now for Arizona, but his upside might be a guard. So maybe not the best fit. You know, it's like, oh, we don't want a tackle tweener. We want a swing tackle tweener. So these are
these guys will come up as we talk about pretty much every single one of these teams. So these names are going to be consistent that we bring up.
I want to set it all up because then I can refer to this later and then we can beat you guys over the head. Then you guys get the reps with this. Okay, so the last guy I'll mention, this kind of little group. Oh, I didn't even mention Talese Fuaga, who some guys have as his tackle one. I think
Oregon State.
From Oregon State, I think Dalen Jeremiah has his tackle one or tackle two. I have him a little lower. I have him as a green chip guy, you know, more of a late first round guy. But another guy that has
the takeaway here is there's going to be some guys potentially available for them to take a tackle in the back half of the first.
Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, who's another kind of project-y tackle type that has like first round grades all over the place. It's like, this is, it's just a deep class. So yeah,
Those are the receivers and the tackles. Any corners, if they do end up moving on from Legarius Sneed, if they do trade Legarius Sneed, is there a corner in this range that you feel like might be worth taking the fits what they want to do?
As far as like, I think they're comfortable with kind of like tweener athletes or guys like maybe not overwhelming athletes or maybe body types that aren't ideal. So a guy like Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama is a guy, started the year very high, has dropped a little bit into this type of range, late first, early second. Smart player, feisty player, not an overwhelming athlete, but in a blitzy scheme that, hey, look at Legarius Sneed beating up guys every single week. You know, that this is a guy that maybe could go to that this type of range. Nate Wiggins from Clemson.
By the way, that's what Trent McDuffie was. Trent McDuffie was like just a guy who could play football, who was not overwhelming in terms of physical profile, size, testing, anything else. Like, yeah, all right, we're going to take the really good guy and just drop him into our defense. It ended up working out okay for them.
The smart football player. Yeah, both the Bama corners are smart players, but like they're athlete types. Terrion Arnold's other Alabama corner. Some guys corner one. I put the Toledo guy as corner one, Quinnon Mitchell, but we'll talk about him down the road. But other guys, Nate Wiggins, I was going to talk about long, more of a Seattle, from Clemson, more of a Seattle Seahawks old corner body type, long, twitchy, but very skinny. So some guys, he doesn't play the run really well because of the lack of size. He hustles and tries. It's just that he's not very big. After what happened to Emmanuel Forbes last year, so maybe some guys are a little skittish with that type of body type, but he's a good player. I like him a lot. It's just the body type's a little iffy, but he might be in this range as well. There's other guys. Ennis Rakestraw from Missouri, feisty body type, plays inside and out. Inside and out. But not huge, not a great athlete. Again, they might like that kind of type, tweener, just play for the football player type. So that, I mean, corner is another interesting position. Like there's probably four or five-ish type guys that might go in the first round or might, you know, sneak up there, especially in the late in the first.
And again, with your team that needs one and there's guys on the edge, there seem to be a lot of tackles that might fit that bill and a lot of corners and some potentially receivers. So the needs seem to align with what this draft looks like for Kansas City. Just worth touching on, I think it's worth bringing this up as we kind of dismount from each one of these teams because they might be able to fill some of these needs via free agents here. The Chiefs only have $12 million left in cap space with Legarius Sneed still on the roster. If they do end up trading him, that number goes to $30 million. So if they wanted to bring in a left tackle, somebody like that, it might make sense. We talked about Trent Brown fitting in with the Bengals potentially with his size and skill set. Trent Brown could play left tackle for the Chiefs. He easily fits into what they do. So there are we already saw Orlando Brown do this. So if there are some guys that they feel like could be some quick free agent solutions, there are still some lingering out there at positions of need for the Chiefs. Let's get to the team they beat in the Super Bowl. San Francisco 49ers, be honest with you, it's going to sound like a lot of the same shit that we're about to talk
about.
Same
exact one. That's what I have. I go, hey, this is a setup for a lineman, like set up for a potential swing tackle of the future.
The difference here, right, is that the Chiefs have glaring need at tackle. That is where their most important need exists, is at left tackle. Obviously, that's not where the Niners are. The Niners' biggest needs are at guard. They brought back John Feliciano on a short-term one-year deal. He supplanted Spencer Burford last year. That's not what you want at right guard. For God bless John Feliciano and how long he stuck around the league. You want an upgrade from that as you are building the unit. So I think that guard specifically is probably the most important need for the Niners. They brought back Colton McKivitz on a short extension, so he's under contract through 2025. But if you wanted to draft a guard potentially that you could move to tackle, either right tackle next year or left tackle when Trent Williams eventually retires, that could be a potential plan. So inside now for outside later is how I would characterize the Niners offensive line needs.
Yeah, and they're just so unique with how they even grade linemen too, a traditional Shanahan offense too, because they'll allow certain things like skinnier body types is what I was going to go with. Yeah, skinnier body types. They go for more foot speed. They're more about leverage, guys that can really find leverage, zone guys. That's what they just think. But they kind of, the hodgepodge offensive linemen that they find, like with my dad, it's easy, big. Like it was really easy to know what he was going to go. Weird. What type of players do I like? But with Shanahan, you'll just see, I mean, remember those Falcons offensive lines? They had like a 290-pound left guard, Alex Mack, big, tall center, just this Jake Matthews, who's kind of like, looks like an ideal left tackle. But all these guys are just different body types. Trying to remember the right tackle, big, long, he came from a D2 school. But big kind of
I can't remember who that is. And I have a lot of pride in my 2016 Falcons.
Dude, I was with them for 2 years. Right, I should know this off the top of my head. I know. I can name like backups and stuff. But he was kind of what I'm saying is they'll go for the Island of Misfit Toys. But I just
even this year's line, right? So you have these bigger guards Feliciano. That they invested in that were falling in line with the transition that was happening where they were doing more gap stuff. So Burford and Aaron Banks are bigger at guard than like Daniel Brun's skill was. But even if with the transition at guard, McKivitz weighs 300 pounds at 6'6". Like, he's not a big man. So their willingness to just kind of be like, yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, whatever.
Like,
whatever.
We'll get there. That's how they've approached this in the past.
I've referred to the meetings several times on the show when Shanahan and Dan Quinn came into Atlanta and they were talking about their ideal guys at each position. So, you know, they like Andre Johnson was the X receiver. You know, it was pretty cool watching the old tape. One of the tight ends.
I love that, though. It's just like, yeah, we just want one of the best athletes that's ever come through college football and was a top three pick.
It was hilarious.
That's what we want to be our X receiver. In fairness to him, he did have Julio. So,
well, this is what he did. He shows Andre Johnson, and then he shows, I think, Pierre Garçon was the Z.
Okay. All right. And that's a little bit more fair.
But then someone asks and goes, who on our roster do you see as best for those types of roles? And he goes, well, we have this guy, Julio Jones. So I'm going to just figure out which one he's best on in each play. And then that was the year that he set like the targets, like when he had so many targets and catches and all that. But anyways, I digress. But the tight end he used was Owen Schmidt. Owen Daniels.
Owen Schmidt Daniels. Would be an interesting one.
West Virginia fullback. No, Owen Daniels, go Badgers, and a different old Patriots tight end that I won't mention. But he was just talking about each body type that we like at each position. But the offensive line one, he would have like he had some Washington right tackle that was like a short arm slow guy because we were like, oh, you're gonna like all these fats, you know. But he was trying to say, I just like guys that get it done. Anyways. This is a long-winded way to say the world is their oyster if they want to go offensive line at pick 31. They have so many different flavors here. I just went a spiel for 5 minutes talking about all the guys. But the guy to me that stood out as a great fit is the Suamata from BYU because I think of his tackle upside, but Jordan Morgan from Arizona because I'm not sure if he can play guard or tackle, like which one he's going to ideally be at the next level. Well, shoot, perfect. they have to fill it out. So let's just get talent and then we'll figure it out.
Dane mocked him there as well. And that one makes the most sense, right? Is that, all right, if that's what you're trying to do, or we need a guard in 2024 and a tackle in 2025, he seems to be the guy that fits that the best. If that Oregon State guy is not going to be available at 31, which it seems like he's probably not going to.
Oh my God, he might go 10th. It's just, I have him graded more this range, but he might go way higher. He has a lot of fans right now.
By the way, so I assume maybe that Washington tackle that you were talking about was Tyler Palumbus, who was there for a couple of years, right? Remember Tyler Palumbus was the right tackle? We're about to have some fun with mock draftable. Who do you think the physical profile that is closest to Tyler Palumbus is in the last 20 years in terms of combine data?
Oh, no. I'm trying to think of Tyler. Is it like...
It's Mike McGlinchey.
So that was the name I was coming to mind. I actually thought it was going to be McKivitz, but is it Mike McGlinchey?
It's Mike McGlinchey. Perfect. So the fact those two guys both were investments in Kyle Shanahan offenses at right tackle for multiple years is very funny. I love that. I love that when you pull it up. And I want to say that like Sam Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson have like two of the most similar physical profiles on that website. So when you see teams that have that sort of type, it's always funny. But I'm with you. I think
Tom Compton was the other tackle I was thinking of.
Tom Compton, yeah. Yes. Who also is, and he played at Atlanta. He was on the Niners for a little bit.
Yes. Yeah,
they have their guys that they really seem to enjoy, that group. So offensive line, I think, makes total sense. The other one is corner. I think that if you look at where they were by the end of last season, this is another team that is going to be in the market for a cornerback. They signed Isaac Yiadom to a one-year deal who had some really good stretches for New Orleans last year after bouncing around, but again, that's a cheap contract. I wonder how they see their cornerback room. That's the biggest question I have, because do they want to play Lenore on the outside because they wanted to keep Ambry Thomas off the field? Or do they want to play Lenore outside because that's how they see Diamandouro Lenore? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't either. I think Lenore is good in the slot. But I think it was getting their best five out there.
That's what it felt like to me.
Lenore was the outside corner when they're in base. So it's like, okay, that's who they view as their number one guy, or number two guy, I should say, with Ward. But yeah, so I think that's what it was. And it was like, I think they too is Isaiah Oliver wasn't a good fit for what they were doing, especially because he's not a man guy. He's not a man coverage guy. He's a zone guy. So when they're on third down playing all that man, he was just getting shredded. And so they're like, okay, we can't play with that. Lenore, you're back in the slot. Thomas, you're back on the outside. Just
and
get
then think about how they
there.
Tried to problem solve later in the season. Logan Ryan comes down and plays the slot. Yes. They bump Lenore back outside. So I still feel like Lenore might have a future in the slot if they find someone in this general range
player.
Who can play outside for them. But however it ends up being divvied up, corner is still a need for this team. There are some veteran corners still available in free agency. Like, I'm sure we'll hit on some of those guys, but if you look at some of the names, Xavier Howard's still out there, Stephon Gilmore is still out there, Steven Nelson, Adoree Jackson. So it's possible that a couple of the teams on this list could end up filling one of the outside corner holes they have with somebody that's still available in free agency. So that's worth mentioning. But outside of corner and tackle, any other needs for the Niners that came to mind for you as you were looking at it?
Not really. That's that they were, to me, another team that just with the line just felt like just such a perfect fit for especially where those guys were going to go. That so I kind of, I would say I got lazy with it, but I was kind of just like, hey, this kind of makes a lot of sense.
So really, I'm going to put you in a terrible spot here.
I was going to say maybe defensive tackle if they want to maybe get someone of the future. Okay,
never
that was,
rule out defensive line with this team okay, is what I have in my notes.
That's kind of, you know, they're kind of spinning the wheel a little bit. So maybe they want to get a guy, okay, we got really large. And again, that's kind of the range. There's not a ton of defensive tackle talent. There's more second round types. So, but, you know, that's why it's 20 to 40. You know, so if a guy's 39 on your board and you take him at 31, okay, no one's going to care. You know, it's like, it even makes sense.
If you look at how they've invested at the position along the defensive line so far in free agency, it was $12 million guaranteed for Leonard Floyd, about the exact same amount for Gross Matos. And there's no guaranteed money left on Malik Collins's deal after this season. And you've seen this team, the way they've built, they never have enough defensive linemen or pass rushers. So if they have that earmarked as a secondary need, that would not be surprising to me. Here's the last one I'll throw out to you, just to be spicy. What about receiver?
I was curious if you go down that path.
Debo has a $28 million cap hit this year.
Yeah, they seem like they're keeping those balls in the air right now. Like,
with a $20 million base salary. And I know that everyone's talking about trading Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk is a superstar. Ayuk is like one of like the best 8 to 10 receivers in the league. I wouldn't trade Brandon Ayuk. Somebody I saw the other day is like, wait, you think they do it for a second round pick? I wouldn't trade Brandon Ayuk for anything outside of a top 10 pick. Truly, I would not.
Brady is now? No. He's phenomenal. You can't. He's phenomenal.
So Debo on a $20 million base salary, that might be another conversation.
And how the time he misses generally, you know, that's usually the one that. That's why Mike Williams was first to go.
just throwing it out there. Just throwing it out there that if we maybe need to address receiver a little bit further down the line, something to keep in mind.
I can see that. Totally see that. Again, you never know what flavor Shanahan would want either. And again, there's so many flavor receivers, so make a lot of sense at 31.
We talked about Jordan Morgan from Arizona as a potential option at guard and then to tackle. We talked about Kingsley Suamatia.
Suamatia.
That's how I had it phonetically spelled out on my sheet just to make sure that I got it right. So those two guys we had mentioned already. Any other players that you feel like are worth throwing out in this general range?
Guyton, again, Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, more of a project tackle. He might go a little before this because just, you know, his movement ability, I think they're going to be suckers for that. That's really the ones that make a lot of sense to me. Again, the Bartons of the world make a sense. I think Graham Barton from Duke makes sense for anybody. Like, yeah, he's going to be one of these guys. All these teams we talk, line, Barton. He's just going to be the simple answer for everybody. So another guy I'll throw out here is Christian Haynes from UConn. This might be a little rich. I have him way up on my big board. I have him as my 34 overall player. I love this guy. He's a very good athlete. He started a ton of games at UConn, not a great program, but this guy is started all these games. He's smart as hell. He moves really well. He's got some tenacity to him. He's great in zone stuff. I think he's a guard only type. But again, if you need a guard, and again, if it's 20 to 40 range, if I have him at 34, if you take him at 31, no one's going to split hairs. So that's a guy that I'm going to throw out there. I'm higher on him than just about anybody else.
Dane has him really at 71 on his big board.
Yeah,
I'm going to take little notes here of the players you guys are furthest apart on.
I love that. Thank you.
And just drop little nuggets in when I'm doing the shows with you guys to make you fight about it. I'm really looking forward
Christian,
to that.
Haynes had a good Senior Bowl, and then he tested really well. And so it's one of those, but it shows on tape some anchor stuff, but how he moves, like I think the Shanahan line coaches go, oh yeah, because he actually reminds me as a better version of Laken Tomlinson, who ended up being a Shanahan guy. He got drafted by the Lions originally, but ended up being in the Shanahan system for years. But there's some similarities to him.
I'm going to put you in a bad spot here. Not going to actually mock this, I'm wondering if there's like a favorite player in these conversations you have for each team. So let's do bad podcasting. Let's go back to the Chiefs for a second. Among all the guys we mentioned, like if you had to throw a name on there, who would you say?
Oh, A.D. Mitchell, easy, okay. from Texas.
If he's there, okay. All right.
That's me not caring about Chiefs team building or anything. That's just me going like, yeah, neutral fan, touchdown, fireworks, woo, like that. And it's realistic range. I'm trying to be realistic with the range where these guys could go to.
And I think that the culture stuff is always a consideration. I know that Dane, when he was mocking him to potentially the Bills, he's like, I don't know if this works, like the type of players the Bills like. The Chiefs have been able to take some chances on guys.
That's it.
Because of the infrastructure they have, because of the culture that they have. This is a consistent strength. This is a tangent here, but this brings me to so many people today talking about what the Bears could have done differently over the last couple of years and saying they should have drafted George Pickens in 2022. There is a 0% chance that the first draft pick of the new era was going to be George Pickens. A 0% chance. So there are teams better positioned to take chances on players like that, and the Chiefs are one of those teams. They have consistently shown that.
It's a little different when these guys get to the NFL. These guys have been big time recruits, been to big schools, some blue blood schools. And then, you know, that quarterback is kind of fighting for his job. I know I'm starting, so why do I listen to him? All right. Well, it's a little different than when Patrick Mahomes is going, get to your freaking depth, get to 12 yards. You better get there. It's a little different when you see these guys run routes. Once they get to the NFL levels. But what I'm saying is that the Bills with him, because Josh Allen too. Josh Allen just seems like a good dude though.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Like, I know. I've seen Mahomes is kind of the gritted teeth, like says it under his breath type of guy. So he actually gets through, I think. So I don't know. That's me also being armchair psychoanalyst right now. But I do think that's such a great point that you bring up though. But Mitchell with the Chiefs is a great landing spot. With other teams, I'm a little iffy on. But for their team makeup, I like.
Even beyond the quarterbacks, I think that Andy Reid, as somebody taking on that sort of personality compared to a Sean McDermott, is worth considering. Think about even Travis Kelce was like a character concern guy coming into the NFL.
And huge character concern.
So Andy, I say it in quotes. It's not even a quote saying. It was a character concern thing. So the Chiefs' ability to absorb those types of personalities and players, I think, is worth mentioning in these conversations.
How did Kadarius Toney go in the fifth round? Well,
all right, so A.D. Mitchell, your favorite fit for the Chiefs. Who would you say your favorite player fit is for the Niners in this exercise?
Oh man, if Barton fell to them, but I don't think he would. But I really like now I'm trying to get the name in my head. Suamatatia. I actually really like him because I like the plan. Even if he didn't was kind of a spot starter at right tackle in his first year, they need a Trent Williams succession plan. Like down the road, I mean, he's getting up there in age. He's a freak. Don't get me wrong. He's probably going to play forever, it feels like. But, you have to have some plan. And then you get a real needle mover. But him or Jordan Morgan, those are the guys that I really like that. I focus them with the offensive line because of just these guys that could be available for them.
Yeah, I think offensive line is still their biggest need. And if you want to pop a guy at guard and, again, have a little bit of a plan down the line at tackle, I think that makes total sense.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Let's get to the Ravens at 30. This is going to be really boring after a while, but if I'm ticking off needs for the Ravens, the offensive line is exactly where I'd start. This one, I don't even think you need to squint at it. You have three starters gone from last year's offensive line. John Simpson is now with the Jets. Kevin Zeitler is a free agent, and they traded Morgan Moses to the Jets. So you're looking at just oft-injured Ronnie Stanley, who just took a pay cut, and Tyler Linderbaum as the two starting offensive linemen that are returning for the Baltimore Ravens. So I don't think you need to look any further than that group when you're talking about the Ravens' needs.
I said, don't see a lot of other spots making sense. I said, O-line, swing anywhere. Just as a starter. We need a starter. But any of those guys I've mentioned, if they want a project type, if they want a guy that we're not sure where his best spot is, five-spot starter, they have a lot of decent choices, especially around this selection spot. I think, and then if you want to just go an auxiliary choice, if they didn't want to go offensive line, I think their typical D-line swing tweener type type of guy too would be kind of like the secondary option. But offensive line makes all the sense in the world to me.
Offensive line is number one. I think you could say like edge rusher is also there just because they had Van Noy and Clowney playing roles last year. Both of those guys are free agents. It's really just Owe and David Ajabo right now. I mean, beyond that, there is not a lot of depth, but we've seen how this team addresses that spot. I mean, they're going to find somebody to sign there on September 8th and have the best six-week stretch of his entire career somehow. So somehow I feel like that's probably what they'll do to address that spot. And the other one I would throw out there is just secondary, because however you want to move the pieces, there's going to be a need. With Geno Stone gone, you really have no depth there if you want to play Kyle Hamilton at safety. If you want to play Kyle Hamilton in the slot, then now you need another safety. So there needs to be secondary help coming somewhere. But again, this, if you lay out that list of veteran corners, that's what this team does. They lost Ronald Darby, Arthur Millette, and Rocky Sin to free agency. So who are the 2024 versions of those guys going to be that they can sign on May 10th and not have them affect the compensatory formula? That's just how this team typically operates. But those are the three I would say: offensive line, secondary, edge rusher, defensive line.
The Ravens, for me, it's like when we do these offseason shows, it's like I feel like I don't want to talk about them until training camp starts. And we do our AFC North.
Completely
preview.
Reasonable way to approach it.
Because that's how it is. It's like we're always, they need this guy. They need this guy. There it is. There it is. The week one of training camp signing. There's the Clowney. There's the, who's the guy for freaking Chiefs? I'm blanking on his name right now. God, great day right now. Great Monday. oh my God, why can't I think of his name? Justin Houston.
Yeah.
Wow, this is great. The Blackwater Ravens, though, that was the joke I wanted to get off. The mercenary of the Ravens.
That's what they do. They do a very good job of that. So the Ravens team needs might feel a lot different on March 18th than they feel on September 10th. And I think that's worth mentioning anytime you're going to talk about this team and how they're going to try to plug some of those holes. That being said, as you're looking at what they need and who might be available, who are some of the names that immediately come to mind? Is it the same names we talked about 10 times already on the show?
Yeah, but pretty much. Barton, yes. Sumatia. Oh my God, I'm going to say his name 500 different ways now because now I can't
get
it out of my head.
I think it's Suamatia.
Suamatia. Thank you.
Suamatia. I think he's right.
There's an extra thing in there that I always mess up. But anyways, that's who actually Dane mocked to the Ravens. He had a trade down, and I thought that was brilliant. I was like, yeah, that makes all the sense in the world.
They only have 9 picks, which feels a little light for the Ravens. So that they might move down to get a couple more somewhere along the way here.
What are we doing over there? Pick it up. Defensive line-wise, if we wanted to just get off offensive line, Jared Verse from Florida State. Again, this is a guy I think will go higher. He's an edge type, kind of like a guy they kind of like, more pocket pusher type. I like him as a secondary pass rusher, more run first type. He's going to probably go higher. Chop Robinson is another Penn State edge. Tested all these Penn State guys test like crazy, and they have no production. I think he had 4 sacks last year.
Wouldn't be the first time. They did that 3 years ago with Owe.
I think Owe had 1 or like 1.5 or something
like that. I don't think he had 1. I think it was 0.
He might not. Yeah. But Chop Robinson has all the twitch in the world. Doesn't really play the. I've actually compared him to Yannick Ngakoue of all players. So that's
another guy who played for the Ravens.
So if they see him, I have him kind of like in the 20s. Kind of makes sense. I don't think they'd go to the Leiatu Latu from UCLA, who I've compared kind of a Diet Coke Trey Hendrickson. not sure if he's kind of their type. I think they like the length and the pocket pusher types as far as, and then the mix up, sprinkle in the old ways.
And he also isn't going to test very well, correct?
So yeah, he hasn't tested well. No,
the physical profile they're seeking out of the position is often different than that.
They like big strong athletes. Like that's what they like up front in the front seven, and that's what they're going to go after. He's not going to fit at that profile.
The only offensive lineman we have not mentioned, and I wonder how you see him in terms of profile, Zach Frazier from West Virginia has been profiled by some people just as an interior offensive lineman. Does he fit this conversation in the same way that Graham Barton would for you?
So he is 37th on my big board. I see him as center only.
Gotcha. Okay. That's good to know.
And so, yep. And that's why that the value, if you ever want to know really just how teams will look at this too, this is how I was taught, is just that if you have positional versatility, you will get a bump. That's going to help your grade because of how injuries happen in the NFL and be able to have that, all the versatility of that. Zach Frazier to me, because of his length, his body type, he's center only, but he's good at it. He's a good center only prospect. But the thing is, we can't really make him at guard if we already have a center, all that. We really just, he's only going to fit this role. So how rich for a guy like the Ravens, that doesn't make sense to me because of Linderbaum. And so that's
my only question was, if he could play guard, would he make potential sense for them? But if you see him as a center only, then he does not fit any of these teams really.
As a center, he's good. Like he's a good prospect at maybe comparable to Barton and Powers Johnson. But the thing is, those guys, I see Powers Johnson could play guard as a rookie before moving to center or vice versa. And I see Barton as having maybe four spot versatility, legit four spot, maybe could spot start at left tackle as well. So that's why I have Barton even higher, is because all that.
Before we move on, which guy is your favorite fit here? If you could drop one guy on the Ravens that we talked about, who would it be?
Yeah, one of the linemen I mentioned before, the Tyler Guyton's of the world, these good athletes that can maybe be a tackle, the Jordan Morgans of the world. If they want to go DB, they are a Cooper DeJean team, if I've ever seen one, because I would love that. Cooper DeJean from Iowa. What position does he play best? People are trying to figure out. I think he play outside corner. I think he play slot. I think he play safety. For this defense, throw him with Kyle Hamilton. I would love it. That would be a weekly watch for me, but I don't know if he'll make it to 30.
Let's get to the Detroit Lions at 29. The needs for the Lions, not a ton. They've done a good job of making sure that there weren't a lot of glaring holes on this roster. The first place I started, I don't know if you feel the same way, was guard. They moved on from Jonah Jackson. They have a fifth round pick from 2023 and some UDFAs currently making up the depth there. So if I had to pick one that I thought was the most glaring, that's probably where I would start.
Yeah. Yep. That's where I started. I say guard. And then after that, it's like maybe an edge, maybe a corner, maybe like that. But it's all maybes. And it's like maybe a receiver. But I think they're really banking on Jameson Williams stepping up this year. Just listen to them. They're really banging a drip. What I'm figuring out with the Lions is they are old school NFL. And I don't mean old school like the 70s. I mean like the 90s and 2000s, where it's the third year. The guy that progresses in the third year. That's what I think. They really just go on that old path, that like kind of traditional, all that. But I agree with you. I had interior offensive line as my number one. I think Barton or Powers Johnson makes all the sense for them because of just their versatility, guard or center. And, maybe get a Ragnall succession plan as well, kind of in your back pocket just as well.
Outside of guard, I'm with you. I mean, maybe a receiver. Josh Reynolds is a free agent. They brought back Donovan Peoples-Jones on a small deal to potentially maybe get slotted into that role. I'd still, even with Jameson Williams, I'd like to see them sign like a bigger bodied receiver or address that somewhere along the way.
Or a second rounder.
It doesn't have to be in round one, but no. Somewhere along the way, can you find that skill set and profile to drop within this offense? Even if we conceive of them as like a big personnel team, they played 11 on 60% of snaps. Like there's still three receivers getting run.
They run everything.
Team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just get their best five out there. They run everything, tight ends and receivers. I actually like them in the second round, them and the next team we're talking about, the Bills, targeting Jalen Polk from Washington.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have three Washington receivers in my top 50 big board. So if you want to know what Michael Penix's weapons were this year, but Polk is a do. He's, if you like Ndunze, you'll like Polk because it's like kind of the same guy, but 90% of them. And I'm really high on him. I have him in my 30s on my big board. But most guys have him more of as a late second, third, early third type. But I love his fit because he'll do the dirty work. I think he'd be a great Z at the next level. He can play in the slot, play outside. I think he'll really mix and match what they have. Doesn't have a lot of juice, but with Jameson Williams, doesn't really need it.
That makes sense. I mean, again, yeah. If you're trying to figure out the profile of guy they need, maybe a little bit further down the draft, The Lions, I thought they might have been an extra second. I can never get the TJ Hockenson trade straight. I think last year they slipped second and thirds. This year it was third and fourths. So they have an extra third round pick this year that came from Minnesota, which is 73rd overall. So, man, this team has done a good job of building their roster.
Dude, the DJ Reader one was like, they being Lions fans, acted like we did a emergency pod just for them after the DJ Reader signing.
And it's kind of how it felt. I mean, that was the most important thing.
We were pretty fired up about it because it happened
right
as the show started. So it's kind of like that perfect kind of a little thing there. But no,
receiver somewhere in the second round, I think is totally reasonable.
I have Polk as my 35th overall guy. Like, I freaking love him. I think he's such a good player. But yeah.
So that makes a ton of sense to me. And then the two others that I would throw out, you mentioned Edge. And I know they signed Marcus Davenport, but it's a one-year, $6 million deal. He's struggled to stay healthy. They brought back John Kaminsky on a reworked contract as well, but it still feels like they could add somebody there. And then the last thing I would say is just secondary depth. Mostly it's safety. Because now, if you're going to have Mel Fonwu and Kirby Joseph, there isn't a lot behind them. CJ Gardner-Johnson was there last year. He's no longer there. So these are things you can address in the middle rounds, though. These aren't things you have to address the 29th overall pick.
And this is the range where I think a lot of edges are going to be slotted for teams. It's not an overwhelming edge class or defensive line class, but there's solid players. And it's more of like a late first, early second types or second round types. But for me, the Lions, and this is a compliment to them, like I think we're both saying, is look at edge, look at corner, look at receiver, look at offensive line, and go BPA, the best player available. That's how I think they will go that way.
Position you want to be in.
And they kind of go about that anyways. I mean, listen to Brad Holmes' comments from the past year. It's just, throwing middle fingers at everybody saying this is what we do. But I think that's what it is. Just look at those four positions. All right, and get what best player that we have there. And they're slotted, I think, to be in a good spot for that.
So you had Laiatu Latu from UCLA falling here in your mock draft that you did for Yahoo. And Dane had Chop Robinson from Penn State falling here. So similar sort of mindset with the types of players, the type of role you see potentially being the best fit for them here in this range.
I think Jared Verse is their best fit, but I think Jared Verse will be gone by now, by 29. But his play style, he's kind of a tough guy. I think a speed to power kind of guy. I think that was what the Lions like. And I actually think he'll compliment Aiden Hutchinson. Why Latu? I don't think they'd be scared by him. Look at Aiden Hutchinson, how he's built. Like, they're not really scared about the length stuff or anything like that. They kind of just go for ball players. So
one other name I would throw out, he had some heat after the Senior Bowl because he had a really good week of practice, apparently, but he did not test well. And that is Darius Robinson from Mizzou, who is a defensive lineman. The reason I would throw him out is he's actually identical, essentially, in size to John Kaminsky. He's like 6'5" and a half, 285. So if that role where he could play inside in some situations, he can pop outside in some situations where Kaminsky may be on his way out as soon as next year, is that a role they see within their defense? And is he a guy that maybe slots into that role for the long term?
See, it's a great call. He's a guy, this is where sometimes it's hard when you just have one eye of the beholder on the show, because I have him way lower than everybody else. I'm like, way lower.
All right,
it's a great call. Like, I did a 10 extra. I did the top 50 and I threw 10 more names. It's kind of like a don't yell at me list. And he was one of them. Because that's how it goes. What about this guy? You forgot him. It's like, I didn't forget about him. Here he is.
You have figured out the content game, my friend.
I know. I'm trying to be an open book with this. But I have him a little lower. But I totally like that, though. I get your mindset. Because even how I have him listed as defensive line. Because I'm not sure. He's a tweener. But tweeners are good now. Tweeners, this is the year. This is time to be a tweener in the NFL. There's another guy, Brandon Dorlus from Oregon. Same type of line of thinking as you. Defensive line. I have Robinson as 61 and Dorlus as 60 because I'm a coward. And I just didn't know. I was like, I'll just keep them together. And we'll be fine with those. But those two type of guys, I have them more as late second round types. But that's kind of where I see that.
Before free agency started, I think you probably would have thrown corner out as a big need for this team. Obviously, they go out and they get Carlton Davis. That's less pressing now. So they put themselves in a good situation where they can address really whatever they want in terms of how they see the best way to add juice to their offense or their defense. Also worth mentioning, they still have $30 million in cap space. So if they want to address a stopgap starter, a guard, if they feel like we can add some safety depth here, whatever, they have some flexibility still to do a little damage before we even get to the draft. So I feel like that is worth keeping in mind for them specifically. Let's get to the Buffalo Bills at 28. Where do you need start for the Bills? I'm curious.
Oh, I actually, originally it would have been receiver, but actually it's that interior offensive line. That's actually where I ended up.
Oh.
And I know. And then I looked at defense and I said corner.
Why do you say interior offensive line?
Going away from Boris, who I don't know. They went from like, oh, I really like this. Can now I'm like, oh, you kind of guys are one injury away from it all falling apart again. I went from like, they lost kind of their depth. They reshuffled it. I think
that's exactly what happened, right? They moved Morse. Yeah. So the David Edwards, who was a backup for them last year, slots into a starting guard role because they moved Connor McGovern over to center and they traded Ryan Bates. So their two backup interior offensive linemen last year were David Edwards and Ryan Bates, neither of whom is on the roster anymore.
So that has me a little iffy. Just that. I think you could
probably hit that a little bit later than 28 if we're looking at interior offensive line depth as the biggest need.
I don't know. I looked at it and said, if Barton is there, just sprint up and select him and reap the benefits of it.
Just drops back to a backup role. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes,
that makes sense, actually.
No, and now you have a lot of versatility there. And best five out there. That's just how I look.
I get that, actually. But no, that's a good point.
I said, just depending on how things fall and sticking with the offense is receiver. Because I think Bills fans would, take me to the wall if I don't mention a receiver for them. But it's, again, they're another guy that I liked with A.D. Mitchell. They're another team with that because of how their makeup is. They went and signed Curtis Samuel. They have Dalton Kincaid.
We have not talked about Curtis Samuel on this show yet because it just fell in like a weird crack and when we were doing these things.
It did, right.
How do you see Curtis Samuel fitting with the Bills offense?
Man, I've been trying to figure it out. I think it's kind of we did this with James Cook a little bit. Now, as far as like, hey, let's use this running back-ish type guy as a receiver.
They
like the idea of
obsessed with run after catch guys. Like this is what has happened. 2 years ago, they didn't have any. They had no guys who could do anything after the catch.
Never.
So now there's just a bug in Brandon Bean's ear where he's just trying to find these rat guys over and over and over again. And maybe there's a connection, obviously, with Joe Brady and Curtis Samuel. He had a really good year with Brady in Carolina. So I get how it all is connected. But his best role to me is as a slot guy, first and foremost, and as kind of a gadget guy. Khalil Shakir feels like a slot guy who played well for them last year. So it just, I don't know how all the pieces fit together, even if I think Curtis Samuel is a good football player.
That's kind of how I even said, I was bringing it down. Stephon Diggs is kind of on a downward trajectory, but he's still a good player. But it's all right, he's best on the outside, but they work him from the slot to get him fed, to like make sure, okay, hey, we don't have a guy that can really is better than you, so let's make sure you get your touches. That's at least for the first half of the year, with Joe Brady was kind of a little downwards there. Okay, so now that we make sure Stephon's on the outside, now Samuel's from the slot, Khalil Shakir can be the move around guy because they use him everywhere, inside, outside, as a blocker. I love Shakir. I won't shut up about him. I still won't because
I'm so I'm sure it pains you to say that the Bills still need a receiver because you just want Khalil Shakir to get his due.
So this is my notes right here. It's like Khalil Shakir could do both, but he's a complimentary player as much as I love him. That's what he is. I know what his upside is, but he's not a true needle mover, a true potential upside guy, number one guy, if we move on from Diggs down the road, that you're trying to straddle both with these picks. Is there the secondary player to start and maybe take over that number one role down the road? That's what you do. So again, there's a couple guys in this range. We already mentioned A.D. Mitchell is another one. Keon Coleman, Troy Franklin from Oregon, Brian Thomas. He might go a little earlier from LSU, but I love him too, outside guy, but again, I think the receiver-wise, they can maybe wait till the second to get maybe a better guy for them. That's just how I view it.
Two other ones that I would throw out. Safety. They brought back Taylor Rapp. Really, the only other guy outside of Damar Hamlin on the roster is Cam Lewis, who's mostly played slot corner for them when he's gotten on the field. I think like 75 of his 170 snaps last year were there. So they need a safety, which I'll get to how they might address this in a second. But the other spot that is interior defensive line. Because outside of Ed Oliver and Daquan Jones, there just isn't much. And do they see their best path to find a difference maker along the defensive front with the pass rush to be on the interior in this range and not on the edge? So those are the two spots that I would throw out. But on a big picture level, I think they're actually the team that makes the most sense to trade down.
Yes, I was just about to say that. So yes.
Dane had them trading up for the receiver, which I understand. They have done that in the past, right? 2 years ago, they trade up for Kyrie, which that did not work out, but They have, and I think they traded up for Dalton Kincaid as well, right?
I think, yeah, with the Jacks.
Yes.
That was the whole big, small, medium story.
That's right. It's a big, small, or medium. That's right.
I've heard this story like 40 times. It's hilarious. Yeah.
But I think that even though that's been their MO previously, if you look at where they are now, it's reset time.
You're flipping the switch. Yeah. Yep. Yes.
It's reset time to an extent. And I'm surprised a little bit at how they've handled some of the financial stuff in these couple weeks. Them deciding to get Dawson Knox's cap hit down this year and give him a little bit more money into the future. I thought, just from the outside looking in, no insider information, you're looking at the 2024 cap and the 2025 cap. Do they just try to take some medicine now and then clear the books to have some flexibility next year? They didn't really do that.
No.
If you look at it right now, they have $18 million in 2025 cap space. And that's before the Taron Johnson extension that just got signed. And I assume they'll pick up Greg Rousseau's fifth-year option. It's only $13 million. So those are two cap hits that you have to account for. And they'll probably restructure Josh Allen the same way they do every year, but they don't have a ton of flexibility. So I think moving to a let's see how many cheap guys we can find approach in this range of the draft could behoove them in the long run.
And the number one positions that you kind of brought up there, okay, safety. We're looking through the draft, just the lens of the draft. Safety, run plugging defensive lineman, you know, to pair with Ed Oliver down the road.
The guy from Texas, Sweat, you know, DeVondre Sweat, guys like that.
But most of these guys, there's Mike, my top safety in this, in my big board is in the 40s. I think that's like the consensus for no matter who is your top guy, because it's not a great safety class. It's not. Also, not a great run plugging defensive tackle class. There's a lot of gap shooters in this draft and a lot more day two-ish gap shooter types. Bills don't need a gap shooter. They have the gap shooter at Oliver. That's what he does.
Jerry Newton from Illinois, who's interesting and could be available in this range. Is it too samey with that Oliver? It's literally the question I had typed out.
It's just, I in a perfect world, if you're playing Madden, it's fantastic. Like, yeah, let's go. But this is when the real world kicks in. You're like, you need to balance this. We talked about this, about a few guys. This is the kind of pairing for these two. So that's why I'm just saying, going off your trade down point, those guys are more second round types. All right, let's fill up both. Let's fill up with those second round types and trade back.
Get an extra fourth year somewhere along the way.
That's it. Or something for next year. This is the switch that you have to turn. Like this, when you have a quarterback like this, you get to do this. You're going to go through so many different stages. This is the revamp. I don't say reload year, but revamp is really what the Bills, I think, are to go through this year.
It's a reset. I think reset, you have to kind of step back and consider like what you want to do. And they don't have a third round pick this year because they traded to the Packers for Rasul Douglas. So I do think that there's kind of a mindset shift that has to happen here with this team and potentially moving out of the first round. And is there a team that really needs a tackle in this range? Or is a team like Baltimore willing to move up to get their guys? So it just feels like they're the team that might make sense for. If they do draft someone, though, and you have to throw a name onto this team that we have not put on any other roster so far, who would that be for you?
Well, it's one of these outside receivers because I think it would be so fun. I still said if Graham Barton's there from Duke, they should sprint up and turn that card in. And
you sold
great.
Me on the interior offensive line thing. That was not the first place my head went, but I actually think it makes a ton of sense.
It's one of those. Where they're at in this stage of their team process, it's not a draft to go for cherry on tops. It's almost like you're rebuilding. It's almost like a year one
you
of a new
restocking whole position groups.
So
yes,
where do you, and my always philosophy is you go inside out. So that's the lines. And to me, you can maybe get a potential guy on the interior, a good one that you can have for the next 10 years, ideally. So I don't know. To me, it's like they're set up for that. And that's, again, it's like, that's how I would look at it. Don't just go, next year we'll sign a guy and we'll patch it together. And then you're going back to the problems that you had 2 years ago when you were going for cherry on top stuff. So that's why I don't want to get too far ahead with that. I would say if Brian Thomas is in strike range for them from LSU, yeah, go for that. But that's just, again, that's cherry on top. So again, I just, in my head canon, I just view the offensive line. So just like a perfect fit for them.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Go to 27, the Arizona Cardinals. This one's tough to do because we don't know what they're going to do with their earlier pick, but I still think we can talk about some of the needs they have on a big picture level. Even if they draft somebody in the top 15, wherever they end up picking, there's still a lot of these needs are still going to exist for the Cardinals if you look at their roster right now.
Team needs players.
Yeah, that's also why this exercise is kind of hard to do for the Cardinals, because there aren't a lot of spots where they don't have a need. That actually might be easier. Is there a spot on the Cardinals roster right now that you think is just solidified, salted away?
I guess quarterback. Yeah, Kyler and Desmond Ritter. All right, that's really it.
But
tight ends are okay. Trey McBride's pretty good, but they still need other tight ends.
Yeah. So they probably don't need a tight end in the first round. Other than that, with this pick, you could really throw out anybody you wanted to. They still have a need at receiver, obviously, other than Michael Wilson, who is potentially a good number two down the road.
That's
somewhere.
Okay? Flashes of a day three guy, yeah.
And so they still need another receiver. This team desperately needs a guard. Their starting guards last year were Elijah Wilkerson and Will Hernandez, both of whom are in the last year of their deal. They're slated to make a combined $6 million against the cap this year.
And they're maxed out. Their O-line coach does such a good job, and they're so maxed out. It's like he's doing all he can just to get them to be workable.
So all of those interior guys that we've mentioned that could be available in this range,
right here,
they fit the Arizona Cardinals. That being said, our Arizona Cardinals also need every position on defense. They need a corner. They need an edge rusher. They need maybe not an interior defensive lineman after what they did in free agency with starter level players. But signing Bilal Nichols and Justin Jones does not preclude you from taking a guy you think is a difference maker at this spot.
No, it does not.
It's kind of hard to talk about them in this exercise.
That's because even when I wrote it, I said everything. I said they filled out the entire interior defensive line, and I wrote, shouldn't stop them. And I go, this is all assuming that they're going receiver with their first selection, because I think they're set up.
Which one? I don't know. Well,
but they're set up.
Are they
nicely
the team that moves out?
Right. And then goes from there. I know. They did a lot of movement last year, everybody. They were up and down. So I don't know. I think they will go pass catcher, but you just don't know with these guys. Again, Jared Verse, I think he's a great fit for them, the Florida State guy. He'll probably, this is where I view Jared Verse, but others are higher on him. So that's why I want to have the caveat here. It's like, I view him in this range, the mid late 20s. I think others that view him in the teens. And I know that sounds just splitting hairs. It's not really the one in the first round. That's a tier difference to me. So that's why I just want to mention him out there. I think anywhere on offensive line, anywhere. They can go. Jonah Williams should not preclude you from, if you like a tackle and just, hey, maybe start him at guard, but it should not preclude you from getting a new building block, especially.
Well, this
on
the conversation we had about Jordan Morgan, right? Jonah Williams has guaranteed money for this year, but I don't think that if you draft Jordan Morgan as a guard now and potentially want to move him to tackle later, like there are a bunch of different ways that you could approach this if you're the Cardinals in this range.
Or you bring him in and you're like, okay, we start him at guard. All right, and training camp will work him at tackle. Oh, shoot, we don't think he can play tackle. Doesn't matter, we got starting guard. Fine. All right, we're fine. You know, again, you're just giving yourself ways to pivot. Fail safe.
The only thing
right.
I will say is that I actually got the Jonah Williams contract wrong when we were talking about it on the show. I thought it was 3 years and $30 million. I think it's 2 years, $30 million.
Yes.
With $20 million guaranteed. So that's starting level tackle money. So even if talent-wise it shouldn't preclude you, I think resource allocation-wise, he's probably going to be their starting
they're saying
tackle for the next 2 years.
That sounds like it, right? Because they're going like, we got this year. Now we can focus on defense or where else that we want to double up on.
Which I don't think is a bad way to think about it, right? He's a starting level tackle. It allows you to just address other positions of more desperate need.
It's the want and need discussion. That's what you're doing. It's now you're turning an absolute need into a want, which is, where you want to be.
worth revisiting some of the defensive names we talked about here. You mentioned Cooper DeJean. If they just need defensive back help, Nate Wiggins,
oh, I love him there.
From Clemson, potentially, you know, all the pass rushers we've discussed, pretty much every defensive player we've talked about so far is potentially in the conversation for the Arizona Cardinals.
Absolutely. And they, that's the thing too, is their team was so, that roster was so barren last year. I don't know what they prefer. So it's not, I truly don't, because what Rawls ran, their defense coordinator, did not look like anything that was run by Jonathan Gannon in his prior history. So again, I don't, it's not, that didn't look like Zimmer last year. That this looked like freaking, I don't know, Buddy Ryan, like that. And so I that's why it's hard for me to go like, oh, they're going to love this guy. They're going to love this guy. It's like, I really just think they, I just want to, I don't know. So I don't know what the guy to kind of like pigeonhole as them is, that that's what they're going to go after.
All right. All that being said, where any name is potentially available, is there a name you prefer if we're going to tack one onto the Cardinals here?
The Cooper DeJean one's pretty sweet, just because it'd be fun with Buda Baker.
You can't put Cooper DeJean on every team. Pick a different guy.
I know. Grant Barton and Cooper DeJean. I know. This is, I'm
sickening.
They're going
to be on 20 teams by the time we're done with this.
I wouldn't mind them with Jackson Powers Johnson or Jared Verse. Jared Verse to me, but again, he might be gone by him.
You also can't keep picking guys that are slated to go
in the
top 18.
This is it. This is it. Those are their needs, and that's what they want. Oh, Byron Murphy would be sweet to them. Defensive tackle from Texas.
That's acceptable. Even again, though he's like 15th on Dane's big board.
I know, and I think I'm up 19th. He's a little high for there. And again, he's the best at the top.
All
right,
so let's go. With this. We're going to do all 32 teams. You're going to have mentioned 8 players, and all of them are going to be top 20 picks.
Okay, because you can't go linebacker, because there's none. You can't really go safety, because there's none. There's only really 2 defensive tackle types that are in this range. And then edge, it's like, okay, I don't see them maybe with Chop Robinson. Like, I don't really see that. Even though I just said I have no idea what types they like. So, sue me. So, maybe they do like him. But, like, Verse, I could see that from a personality standpoint, because just he's like a defensive version of Paris Johnson. You know, all the tough guy, kind of like, really kind of like being the leader type. And then, like, just offensive-wise, all right, Fontenot's there. Love that for them, because I think he could play any of the 5 spots. But again, I don't know if he's going to be there in the teens. So that's why I keep coming back to the same names.
Picking 27th overall. What are you talking
about? My menu's not as high. It's not as big here. All right. Do they go double up a receiver? Are they going Marvin Harrison Jr. with their first pick, and then they just go with another receiver and just juice it up all the way? That'd be awesome. I'd love that. Nerds would love that.
I really want...
That would actually be the best case of your team building scenario. Just juice up the receivers and go from there.
That's fine with me. I mean, I'm completely fine with that. I want Marissa, who's listening to this right now, I want Marissa to just write down all the names that you're going to attach to these teams. And when we're done with it, I want to see how long that list actually is. It'll be 32 teams, but it's only going to be 10 players. This is good.
Well,
this is very good stuff.
We're going memento order here. So I don't know who's off the board. So it's, I don't know.
you've been put in a difficult situation. I will fully admit that before I give you shit about it.
I'm reverse engineering my own. Like I have to reverse engineer what picks that might have gone already. So that's why these names are the only ones to come up. All right. I really like Marvin Harrison Jr. for the Cardinals.
Yeah. Good at 27. Yeah. They're just going to keep trading down. They're going to have 100 picks. And they're still going to get Marvin Harrison Jr.
That's it. It's a Spielman, Rick Spielman team building strategy. Just get all the 7th rounders.
Last one here, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 26.
I have some different guys here.
Let's do this. Very excited. Yes. That being said, my number one need for the Tampa Bay Bucs, as I look at this, is still might be guard.
This has been one of the harder teams for me to like find a good player fit. When I've done these mocks every week,
let's talk
one of the
this through. What yep. other needs do you see potentially? Because Aaron Stinney and Matt Filer are gone. They signed Sua Opeta from the Eagles on a small 1-year deal. So they still need an interior offensive lineman, but you could go a bunch of different directions. I have cornerback. Do they need another edge rusher? Like, where would you go?
I said maybe offensive line interior guy, but then I said corner was the one that stood out to me, especially at post Carlton Davis trade. And then I said maybe D-line edge. They're kind of been really kind of reconfiguring this defensive front over the last couple of years. They just lost Shaq Barrett, I believe, even though they have Diaby and everything like that. So they have, and Tryon actually had a nice year, and Logan Hall had a nice year. They're younger players, but they can maybe just drop in another guy if they really want to turn this into an absolute strength. I think I
just said D-line help in general, wherever they feel like they need it. It's hard to pin down with this team. I totally feel you on that.
Because they, and also on their defensive front, they always go for these tweener types. So you're like, what do they view as, is that ideal for them or is that what they like? So because of just how Bowles uses these guys. But they nailed Kancey and Diaby last year. So that might not be as much of a need as I thought going into this.
So you feel interior offensive line and corner are the two things that stick out to you.
Those are ones that stick out to me the most.
I would agree. And again, it's like the fifth team that we've said this about in this range. They need interior offensive linemen and cornerbacks.
Let's stop all the... okay, I'm done with the line talk. So we'll go corners here. All right. So my three blue chip corners are Terrion Arnold from Alabama. Actually, I had Quinion Mitchell from Toledo higher. So those are my top two. And then Cooper DeJean from Iowa, who has a whole bunch of spots.
Do you want to put Cooper DeJean on the Bucs?
So no, because all right, I see DeJean as like a guy that top 15, top 16, but others have him slotted like a tier down, like late first. I don't see that. I see him higher. But that, again, that's why it's all subjective and all that. But corner is one of the most eye of the beholder of positions. This is so much about scheme fit. This is so much about stylistic fit, mindset fit, man, zone. Is he a press guy? Does he use his hands well? Does how are his ball skills? How is he as a tackler? So that's what I'm saying is Terrion Arnold might be someone's corner one or corner two. He might not go that way in the draft. Teams might go. I'm going to go with Quinion Mitchell because he tested so well. I might go with Nate Wiggins. Even though he's skinny, he runs really well and he's long. So that's why that's another guy that might bring it because Terrion Arnold's mindset is very feisty. He's very smart. That's a guy that fits perfectly for the Bucs. But again, some guys have him as a number 10, number 11, number 12 overall. Some might have him as 20, 22, 23 overall. You just don't know how these guys fall.
Is there a fit stylistically in a guy that seems like he might be available in this range, a corner specifically that you think makes sense for the Bucs?
That it's the two Bama guys. It's Arnold or McKinstry, Khalid McKinstry, who I mentioned earlier. Those two, to me, make sense because of maybe I'm just going one for one with Carlton Davis and that kind of play style. But
I think that's fine. If they're thinking about types within the defense, I think that makes total sense.
They like hand fighters at corner because they're blitzing. Bowles is going to blitz them. So he wants guys that are feisty and getting guys grills. So those two both make sense to me as far as stylistic fits. I mean, shoot, Quinion Mitchell fits anybody for Toledo, from Toledo. He would fit anybody, so them too. But I think he's going way higher than this.
So, and then Dane has him, like, I think, as the 11th overall player on his board.
I have him. He's my first defensive player. I have him at 13th overall. Guys are all offense, by the way.
Dane in his latest mock, in his post-combine mock, had Mitchell as the first defensive player taken in the entire draft. So you guys are aligned there. You go a little bit further down. He has McKinstry as the 29th overall player on his board. So that might be a fit that potentially makes sense. But corner is the one that really does jump out to me. You know, they have Zion McCollum on the roster. You know, he was a slot guy originally when Davis was there. So they really do need another outside starting corner after trading Carlton Davis. And it does feel like that might be something available to them at 26.
I just realized they said Tavier Thomas. I like Tavier Thomas.
You want to pop him in the slot? It's because McCollum has played on the outside. But with that, I still think that outside corner is probably their biggest. And then guard. Somewhere along the way, if they can find a guard. And
offensive line, they don't seem to have a specific type. They'll go for short arm guys. They'll go for athletes. I mean, they have one of the best athletes in the league and Tristan Wirfs, but then look at what his right tackle looks like. So, and look at the guard next to him. Like they don't have they're very much a film team. And I mean that as a compliment, as far as their personnel guys, you can tell they don't have like, it has to be this length or it has to be this threshold of testing. They're very much, they like athletes. I think every team does, but they'll kind of just go for off film. So why I'm saying that, a guy like Powers Johnson, a guy like Barton, all these types of guys, those guys make all the sense because of where they're at.
The Bucs signed Tavier Thomas while we were doing this podcast. I was wondering why I didn't know that because I was looking at the depth chart before we started.
Yeah. That was news to me because I know they had the rookie corner last year, Izian. They had him and he played decently in the slot last year. So I was like, when they signed Tavier Thomas? Okay. It was literally
I think it was like an hour ago. So that's funny. Why, because I was just looking at their depth chart before we started recording and he wasn't on there. So that's why I feel a little bit better about that. Okay.
I do too, because I was like, did I skip on that? Like because I like Thomas. That's a name I actually know. So that was
bring this full circle. That's part of the challenge of doing this exercise on March 18th. But I wanted to be able to spend some time on each team. I didn't want to just do a mock draft where we ran through everybody and did 2 minutes each, just because I wanted to really dig in on some of the needs, what player profiles they've chased in the past, what their behavior is, all this sort of stuff, because I don't feel like we did that enough last year in the draft pods that we were rolling out. So I wanted to spend some time each week talking about the team specifically, even if this is a little ham-fisted in terms of structure and design and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and even when doing these mocks, and something we've joked about, you know, now in the media and figuring this all out, is that this is how you do a mock. Is you go, okay, I'm looking at the cap, I'm looking at their depth chart, I'm looking at maybe, oh man, they had to move on from this guy. Oh, that guy wasn't that good last year. This is just really just talking out loud what a mock draft process is. And actually, it's the best exercise you could do for how you think the draft will play out. Because then you start going, well, they don't need that. They do need that.
That's what
they really need that.
If we're doing it backwards, so we can't do an actual mock draft, but talking through how you do a mock draft for all these picks, that is the goal. And that is what we're going to be doing every Tuesday here for the next, I think, I don't know the math.
3 weeks?
32 to 26, 26 to 18, I think 5 weeks. I think it's five sets of like six teams. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
Math.
Graham Barton will not be every pick, I promise, guys.
Well, Cooper DeJean might be if we keep going down this road. So
he has actually a couple, and I think in our next set that I really like, because I loved him for, I think the Packers are in there. Love him for the Rams.
So we're going to be doing 25 through, I believe, 18 or 19. I don't know how I mapped it out on the next show. So be on the lookout
Cowboys,
for that.
Oh, yeah.
Very excited about that. Like I mentioned, every Thursday here in the run-up to the draft, it is going to be essentially Prospects to Pros plus me. So sorry for all of you who loved Nate and Dane on Prospects to Pros. I'm crashing the party here for the next month and a half. I'm very excited about that. I love doing shows with you guys. And the fact that we can do it every single week, I'm really looking forward to it. And then we'll also have a show on Friday every single week. And Football GM will be coming your guys' way on Saturday. So one more time, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Football GM on Saturday in the run-up to the draft. So just get that in your brain and start looking for shows on those days, because that is how we're going to do it. For now, though, this is all we've got. We sincerely appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back on Thursday with Dane. Until then, talk to you guys soon.
This was the Athletic Football Show.